Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Emily Winicky and I'm the Community Engagement Coordinator here at Syracuse University. I would like to begin, as we do with all Syracuse University events, by acknowledging with respect the Onondaga Nation, firekeepers of the Haudenosaunee, the indigenous people on whose ancestral lands Syracuse University now stands. I am now honored to introduce this morning's speakers, Matthew Vincent and Tori Russo. Matthew Vincent is a partnership specialist with the New York RCC Field Division of the U.S. Census Bureau. Matthew has worked as a geographer and researcher and holds a master's degree in geography. He is passionate about New York's communities and people. Matthew's vision with the census is to work with partners to ensure a complete count. Tori Russo is the point person for the City of Syracuse in coordinating with the Census Bureau, state and local government, as well as with private and nonprofit organizations, volunteer groups, and other community organizations which represent people impacted by the census. Russo has served as Mayor Walsh's Public Information Officer since January 2018. Before entering public service, she worked with Peace Incorporated and with Hope Print in communications and youth programming positions, respectively. She is a 2016 graduate of Syracuse University with a dual major in magazine journalism from the S.I. Newhouse School of Public Communications and international relations from the Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Relations. Please join me in welcoming Matthew Vincent and Tori Russo.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here presenting the facts about the census to you and letting you know how you can shape the future with the 2020 census. A little bit about the Census Bureau. We're the largest statistical agency in the United States. We're the leading source of quality data about the nation's people, places, and economy. We conduct over 130 surveys and programs. Most important for my focus is the decennial census, but we do have other programs that we're in the field constantly, so that's something we want people to be aware. We're not just every 10 years, we're all the time. We do surveys. We want you to know how you can find out about if you're in a census survey. That's census.gov/programs-surveys/surveyhelp.html. Well, we'll make sure you have the link as well. We are in field all the time, so we want you to know this because we take fraud very seriously. You can report suspected fraud to 1-800-923-8282. You can also visit us on our census website. That'll have information on how you can verify if a mailing is from the Census Bureau and how to identify our representatives in the field. Our mission is simple for the 2020 census. We need to count everyone once, only once, and in the right place. This is a complex task. America is a country with an increasingly diverse and growing population. We're going to be counting over 330 million people, we estimate, in over 140 million housing units. Why do we do this? Census is mandated by the Constitution. It is mandated by Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution that we have a census for the purpose of apportionment. We've been doing this every 10 years since 1790. It's crucial also for representation and for funding. We want everyone to know the message that the census is safe, easy, and important. Fundamentally, the census determines the number of seats each state has in the U.S. House of Representatives. We use these population counts to define congressional and state legislative districts, school districts, and voting precincts. In addition to these important political concerns, it also determines the allocation of $675 billion in federal funding, at least. These are programs that you all recognize. You may use them, your family members may use them. If you use the roads, you're certainly using them. These are programs like Medicaid, SNAP, highway planning, Section 8 housing, special education grants, Title I grants, National School Lunch Program, WIC, Head Start, our foster care system, and the health centers that we all depend on. The data from the census provides insights to governments, businesses, community planning groups to establish guidelines and baselines for planning. The population benchmarks of the U.S. Census are critical for nearly every other United States survey. We make sure that the 2020 census is safe in a number of ways. Your private information is never published. This would be your name, your address, your social security numbers, and telephone numbers. None of that information is ever published by the Census Bureau. We collect this information only to produce counts and statistics. Personal information collected by the Bureau cannot be used against any respondent for any purpose by government, agency, or court, or private enterprises. Your landlord cannot use your census count against you. We enforce this through the law Title 13. Anyone who violates Title 13, that's a census employee, would be subject to severe penalties, including a federal prison sentence of up to 5 years or a fine of $250,000. We do take this extremely seriously. It's going to be easier than ever to respond to the 2020 census. We're offering respondents 4 ways to be counted. In 2020, people will be able to count online. This, of course, covers many households, although some people don't have internet access. So we are offering phone support. That is new in 2020. We want everyone to know that you can call the census and be counted. That's a good thing for a lot of households. Of course, we will also be offering paper forms. I'll explain when I go over how the mailings that we're going to be sending will work. And yes, if you want a paper ballot, you will receive one. Of course, those who have not self-responded will be followed up with by an enumerator. Questions we ask are simple. Your name, age, your date of birth, your race, Hispanic origin, your relationships to the other people in the household with you, your gender, and the tenure. We'll also ask some operational questions that are used for quality control. We're never going to be asking for your social security number. We're never asking for any money or donations. We're never asking for anything on behalf of a political party, and we're never asking for your bank or credit card information. It is a sure sign that someone is trying to pull a fraud if they are asking for this sort of information and claiming to be part of the census. We know America is a diverse country linguistically, so we are offering full language support online, by phone, by mail, as well as advertising for 12 languages plus English. That means we'll be covering 99% of the households and their primary language with our outreach. That means almost everyone is going to easily be able to respond to the census in their language of choice. And on the phone, that means you will be talking to someone in your language, not going through a voicemail system. Beginning in March 1st, we'll be having information lines available for people who want to call our numbers. We will be following up with that on the 12th when we'll be rolling out self-response. And I'll talk about that a little bit more, but I want this information to be out there to know that you can call the census already. We also know that there are many languages in the United States, so we're offering, in addition to the 12 languages plus English, we're offering supplemental support for 59 other languages. We have language guides. They're available to the public at our website to make sure that people have the opportunity to respond to the census and can work the process through in their language. We know that's not all of the languages in the United States. That's, of course, why we're working so intensely with partners to make sure that linguistic communities that are not covered will have support either through themselves or other resources that we will deploy. How are we going to get everyone to respond to the census? Very simple. Between March 12th and the 20th, American households will receive an invitation to respond to the census. Some households are also going to receive a paper questionnaire at that time. I'll get into that in a little more on another slide where I'll explain about our different language programs. But self-response begins on the 12th. Any household can go online and respond on the 12th, but you will receive your invitation at that time. Following up with that, we will send a reminder letter. After that, households that have not yet responded will receive a reminder postcard, followed by a reminder letter and a paper questionnaire. Last, a final reminder postcard approaching the end of April, where we will follow up in person. I want everyone to know that the census, safe, easy, and important. You can help us today by being a trusted voice in your community and share that message that the census is safe, easy, and important. We're still hiring as well, and if we want people to know that we have census jobs. If you know someone who's looking for some work, tell them about our jobs. 2020census.gov/jobs. It's the only way to apply, and we definitely welcome anyone sharing that message. Of course, we're paying $20 an hour in this area, plus additional rates for mileage. It's very easy to apply. One simple online application at 2020census.gov/jobs. In New York, we're going to be recruiting over 121,000 people. I want to tell you a little bit about how we're working in the field, when those operations have happened. Group quarters, advanced contact. Group quarters is our process for counting those who don't live in households, who live in a living situation that's managed by others. Those would be people experiencing incarceration, people living in dorms, people living in senior living facilities. We reach out to those organizations and then coordinate with them. We're also doing service-based enumeration. That process is the count of those persons who are experiencing homelessness or transitional living who would not be counted in either a group quarter setting or in a household. That's a very difficult operation, and we take it very seriously. We want to make sure that everyone in that population is counted. We often get a lot of questions about how that works, and I'll be happy to explain more about it. We'll be doing our group quarters enumeration beginning in April, and we'll be following up with that to get a complete count of those populations. We have our process for enumerating those who are in transitional living as well. Following up with that in April, we're going to be doing what we call early non-response follow-up, which is where we reach out to those who are, it's basically college students. We want to catch them and count them where they live most of the time, which is in their student university community. Then in May, we will be doing, May through July, we will be doing our non-response follow-up. That is where enumerators visit those who have not self-responded to count their households. We have a number of informational contents that you can look at on our websites. One that we get, a question we get a lot is, well, what is my letter going to look like? That's on our website. People also want to know, what have we done to purchase media in our communities? That is all public information, and we want you to look at it. We know that this is important, and if you're a partner, this may help you coordinate your own efforts to ensure a complete count. Our upcoming initiatives, this is Statistics in Schools Week. We are working with schools to make sure that students and administrators are aware of what's coming with the count, and to help disseminate some of our data resources to schools. As I mentioned, self-response begins March 12th. That is when anyone is going to be able to respond to the census online. On March 20th, we're going to be launching our live maps of response rate. These will be available to the public, and you'll be able to see who is responding in which areas of your community and which areas of the community are going to need help responding. That's going to guide the effort of our partners, of course, but it's also going to guide our own internal efforts to make sure we have a complete count. We're a data-driven organization, so we're going to follow through with the data that we receive from the response rates to target our efforts to make sure everyone is counted. We are having our worship weekend. That is very important because many hard-to-count communities are well served by communities of faith. We want people to know that trusted voices are endorsing the census and are going to be working with the census to make sure there's a complete count in all communities. As a geographer, this is of special interest to me, but I think it's of great interest to the public as well. We have a tool, it's called Census Rome. You can visit it at census.gov/Rome. It is a tool where we've developed to help understand and identify potentially hard to count communities. We use data from the American Community Survey and other estimates we've developed to have a low response score metric. That doesn't mean how much we're going to undercount it. It's just an estimate of how hard we think it's going to be to get self-response in a particular tract. The darker tracts are going to be harder to survey than lighter census tracts. There's a lot of reasons for that. It could be linguistics. It could be internet access. It could be poverty. We know all these things can be tied to self-response rates. Here's an example of some of the data that you can review with the Rome. This is one of the tracts in Syracuse that is potentially going to be harder to count. We have a lot of data available on this. I think there's at least 38 variables, and you can look at this data. This is data for the public to help you understand what is going on in tracts and why we may have a hard time counting them. I mentioned that we'll be doing, some people will be receiving different things on that initial mail out. We have what we call Internet First and Internet Choice. That base Internet Choice means on the first mailing, you'll be receiving a paper form. Internet First means that you'll only be receiving an Internet invitation. We have demographic variables that we're using to assign tracks to those different strategies. We also have whether or not it's bilingual, and that's obviously based on the rate of Spanish-speaking persons in a given tract. I wanted to highlight that the Census Bureau, we're not just taking your data. We have data to give to you as well. Our data are a free resource to you, the people. We have opportunities to teach you how to access our data and how to use it to the best effect. We can arrange data presentations for your organization. We have data access workshops and training sessions that are a resource to the community. We offer, of course, webinars on how to use our data programs and to get the data that you need for your particular research question. We can assist you with data and survey inquiries. All these tools and more are available at census.gov. We have the American Fact Finder, My Census Business Builder, My Congressional District, and On the Map. These are all tools that help you easily and quickly model and understand the data that affects your community. You can sign up at census.gov/academy. That's our learning center. We welcome you to use this data. It's a valuable resource for the community. We are on all the major social media platforms. Our username is Census Bureau, U.S. Census Bureau. We welcome you to like and share our content. It's very important material, and we appreciate when we have your shares. You can reach us at the partnership program. That's census.gov/partners/2020.html. We have our field opportunities for jobs. That is 2020census.gov/jobs. And of course, you can reach out for our data. That's 1-844-ASK-DATA. I have a short video I just want to share with you about our message with the census.
Can one girl in a small town, an architect in a major city, and a suburban high school coach shape the future of the United States? Yes, they can. Because every 10 years, the census gives us that power. You can shape your future by responding to the 2020 census. Where do we need new roads to make our lives easier? Where will new school programs help our children thrive? Where could a new health clinic benefit neighborhoods? The 2020 census will inform these decisions and shape how billions of dollars will be distributed to communities like yours each year. And in 2020, you can respond to the census online, by phone, or by mail. It's easy, safe, and important. Make sure you and everyone you know is counted. Now is the time for you to get involved. Your community needs you. Together, we can educate and excite, inspire and make sure every voice is heard. Together, we can shape our future.
Great. Thank you so much for your time and attention. Tori Russo is up next, and appreciate it very much.
Good morning. Good morning. So as Emily mentioned, I work with the City of Syracuse. I'm our census coordinator. I'm also an SU graduate, so it's pretty cool to be back here speaking with all of you in an SU building at an SU event. I never would have thought that this would have happened, so thank you for having me. I'm here to talk to you a little bit today about my role with, as Emily mentioned, coordinating some of our key community stakeholders, different levels of government. We work closely with the Census Bureau, with New York State, with Onondaga County, but also with community partners, some of whom are here today. I see Fanny in the back. She's been really critical to this outreach process. Also Brian Fay here for the City Community Centers, who have been really critical to this process. So we're going to tell you a little bit more about what we've been doing to help make sure that residents of the City of Syracuse and of our community at large know what the census is, how it impacts our community, and how they can make sure they're counted in 2020. You've already heard a lot of this from Matthew, some questions that I typically go over. What is the census? Why is it important? We'll get into that kind of at a hyper-local focus on our next couple slides. What will I be asked? What won't I be asked? We like to share this information just to help kind of dispel some of that myth. Also, help people identify if there's potentially a fraud or scam going on. Is my information safe? That's definitely a big question that we get. And as well as a big concern for a lot of residents in our community. And when can I respond? So you have that timeline there, just as a reminder that starting next week, information is going to start being mailed to households, inviting people to respond. Talking about that impact on community, the George Washington Institute of Public Policy put out a study that said it's about $1.5 trillion per year that gets divided up to states and communities based on the census data. That's for more than 300 community programs. Matthew named some of those for us in his presentation. In New York State, it's about $73 billion that we get per year. That's just for the 55 largest programs that are funded to our state, so it's likely more money than that. When you look at this really surprised me when I learned it, so I've been trying to share this, but it's not built into this presentation. But when you look at how much money we give to the federal government in taxes every year as a state, the difference is about $26 billion, at least for the year that this study was done. So we are paying $26 billion more and getting that $73 billion back for programs. If our community is undercounted, that amount is going to grow, kind of that difference of how much we're paying and what we're getting in return is going to increase. The other piece of this that I try to help residents understand is the undercount, the impact of an undercount, it doesn't mean that, the inverse, we are still trying to provide programs to the same number of people but with less resources to do it. And I think whenever you start to look at just the list of some of those programs and people can start to make those connections to your lives, you really understand just how much it impacts all of us day to day. Federal direct student loans are one of the programs that the census data is used to determine funding. And that's how I got to go to college at this school, was through being able to borrow loans from our government. Couple other impacts. We talked about the representation in the House of Representatives. New York State is almost certainly going to lose one congressional seat. Some of the numbers I've seen, if we're undercounted by as little as 0.6%, we could lose a second seat. When you work out the math of that, it's like 115,000 people. If you look at how much they think the city was undercounted in 2010, it was like 5,000 people just in the city of Syracuse potentially. So when we're looking across the state that has millions of people, it seems pretty possible that 115 could get missed somewhere. And then we also talked about how it's used to redraw our legislative boundaries. So what are we doing about this? In July 2019, the city and the county came together with the Community Foundation and about 40 community partners to launch the Syracuse Onondaga Count Complete Count Committee. You can see our goal is to inform, engage, motivate, and I've since added in support our residents to complete the 2020 census. I think that support piece of it is really critical. We know that people have questions, we know that people have concerns, we know that people don't have access to the internet and or to a device to use the internet and may need help to respond online that way. So this coalition of government and businesses, elected officials, nonprofit organizations, this is what we're working to do, to share this information with residents, but also make sure that they're supported to be able to respond. This was a survey that we had done probably May and June of 2019. We sent this out to probably 500 contacts in the community just to get a better sense of within Syracuse and Onondaga County, what do you think are residents' biggest concerns, fears, and barriers to responding? So you can see just a couple of the most selected barriers to respond: distrust of the government, lack of information about the value of the census, a potential question regarding citizenship status, which we know is not going to be on the census this year. And then some of the communities at risk of undercount that our service providers felt were most at risk of undercount here: undocumented immigrants, people experiencing homelessness, people who do not speak English fluently, low-income people. So you can see just how critical the work of community organizations is to any of this outreach activity. Our nonprofits are serving our residents daily. They have established relationships, they have established trust, and so we really have depended on them to be able to continue to push this information to as many residents as we can. This is a map of the city of Syracuse. It shows you the tracks most at risk of undercount. So if you look here, kind of in the center of the city, do those colors look okay to you? Okay. So the purple census tracks, we have 19 of those. It's predicted that in those tracks, households, more than 30% of households will not self-respond to the census. So more than 30% of households will not self-respond to the census. So that means that the census enumerators who go around and knock door to door, they're gonna have to go around potentially to a lot of households in those census tracts. It is less likely that if you don't self-respond that you'll be counted or that you'll be counted accurately. So that's really the message that we're trying to push in our community is respond for yourself. And if you respond for yourself, no one's gonna come to your door. So. Even in those orange census tracts, that's still a pretty high risk of undercount. It's about 25 to 30%. So you can see it's about two-thirds of the city where we are really targeting these efforts, which I'll tell you a little bit more about. We have these outreach phases, these kind of general phases that communities across the country more or less have been following. That July announcement I mentioned where we launched this Complete Count Committee to about the end of 2019, we were just in this early education phase, trying to bring in other partners, make sure that they had census information, accurate census information, made sure that they were starting to think about what other organizations do I work with, what other partners can I kind of bring into my network, and how can we coordinate the resources that we have to make sure we're getting to as many residents as possible. As we moved into January and February, kind of moved into this awareness phase. So kind of finalizing the plans that we had been working on. Some groups are starting to implement plans. We've been seeing a lot of community meetings popping up. I'm sure Matthew and Chris can tell you about how busy they've been talking to organizations really over the last year, but especially once 2020 came around. As we move into, I guess we're in March now, but as we kind of move into this self-response period, which is starting on March 12th, that's where you're gonna see a lot of organizations are thinking about, okay, how do we actually help people to respond? Do we have computers available? Do we have a staff person who is trained or available? And if not, do we know where else we could direct people in our community to go so they would be able to have that support to respond? And then May through July, that reminder phase, so that's whenever the census takers will be going out, going door to door. We scale back on that in-person outreach that we've been doing, and we're looking at a targeted advertising campaign. So looking at that map, being able to see in real time where have people responded, where have people not responded, and how can we target our advertising to try and encourage people who may not have to open their door to the Census Bureau or to respond for themselves. So some of the actual activities that are gonna be going on, this is just kind of a summary of what's been happening with the Census Bureau, New York State. They have a grant opportunity available now. There's about $20 million that they are distributing to municipalities. 75% of whatever comes into an area has to go to nonprofit organizations. So we're working now to solicit applications from our organizations and try and get this funding out to people as soon as possible so they can put it to good use. I mentioned the advertising campaign materials. I also wanted to touch on the Community Foundation. They have been an incredible partner. They provided partial funding for my position, so that's the reason I get to stand here and speak with you all today. They've also provided grants to Onondaga County for some outreach on our central bus system, as well as Interfaith Works, the libraries, and WCNY. So thank you. You all are working on some PSAs for us. To quickly touch on some of what the county has planned, a lot of the outreach activities that they are focused on is through the programs and departments operated by the county. So senior lunches, we mentioned the libraries. I think they have worked it out to have a staff person on kind of at the entry of social services. They see about, I think, 600 to 800 people there a day, so they're going to have a person who will be able to talk about census information, answer questions, and my understanding is help people to respond to the census there. So just a little bit about kind of countywide what's going on, kind of honing in on what we're doing in the city. We're working to launch an ambassador program, so we have some funding that we've re-granted to our four city community centers to be able to hire ambassadors to do outreach in the census tracts, the neighborhoods around the centers. We have a number of organizations that are participating in that on a volunteer basis as well. We've had some educational events throughout the month of February where, as organizations had certain events, there was a social action forum at Fowler that I presented at the other day. We've just been there trying to relay this census information. Throughout April, we are working on coordinating a series of self-response events. So working with our community centers, the city has some funding where we can provide food and materials, some incentives to try and entice people to come in, and then there will be people on site with devices and who are able to help residents to complete their census. So trying to do something that is one part fun, one part informational, and then one part practical, really getting that information collected. That period that we talked about, May through July, that follow-up period where the Census Bureau has asked organizations not to be out going door to door doing outreach so as not to confuse residents is who's coming to the door and for what, why. We've been thinking about doing a mobile census station, so having tablet devices and a table set up at the many community events and festivals going on in that spring and summertime when the city comes alive again. So that's something that we're working on, as well as we have a video that Solon Quinn produced. We hope to be able to finally distribute that to the community, be able to show that. It features local residents who are sharing the census information. So we're really excited about that, and it should be done any day. This slide I left in there, so we had used this presentation with some of our media outlets to help them think about how are you talking about census. I thought it was just a good slide to leave in here for you all in case you're thinking about, well, what can I do to support these efforts. The advice that I give to everybody is just talk to your friends, talk to your family, talk to the people that you work with, that if you volunteer at your church or another religious center. Wherever you go, just talk to people about the census. And so some of the things that we're thinking about whenever we're thinking about, okay, how do I talk to people about this? Some of those impacts that we talked about, that potential to lose funding for those vital programs and services, the potential to lose one or two congressional seats in New York State. Think about some of those concerns, some of the misinformation that's out there. We talked, Matthew talked about how the census, it doesn't ask for any information about political parties. It doesn't ask for financial information, social security numbers, none of that. We really want to help people to understand that so we can make sure that they aren't being scammed. And then consider kind of what different audiences need to know. So a big message that we keep trying to push is count your children. You have to count children. I've had people tell me that in the 2010 census, they had young children in their house who weren't in school yet, and they didn't think that they needed to count them because they weren't in school. And so, you know, the example that I've heard a lot of people giving, sure, maybe you have a two-year-old at home now, but this number that we get in 2020 determines our funding and our representation until 2030, at which point that child will now be 12 years old. And if you think about kind of the potential to lose out on that funding, just even just for one person for 10 years, some of the estimates I've seen, it could be as much as $20,000 in 10 years just for missing one person. So just think about maybe what different information people need to know. College students are another great example. A lot of confusion around, should I be counted where I go to school? Should I be counted wherever my parents live? If I'm an international student, should I be counted at all? And that answer that Matthew gave us is wherever you live most of the year. So our students that are in our community here on April 1st, we want to make sure they know to be counted here. And then this slide is just some suggested resources. A lot of the information that I referenced in this presentation can be found on these websites. Thanks.
We'll open it up for questions for both of our speakers.
From Syracuse University, I have two questions for Matt. They're very simple. On your earlier slides, you mentioned that you'll be asked about your name, household, number of people in a household, but also tenure. What does tenure mean?
That's your living situation, rent, own outright with a mortgage.
So you won't be asked about your age. Okay, and I commend the census Bureau giving language help, almost 40 languages. And the final one is American. Final language was American. What does that mean?
Was it ASL? Yeah.
Oh, it's American Sign Language. It might have been cut off. I'm sorry.
This is probably a detailed question, but following up on Ruth's question, college students, I saw April 1st on the last slide. Mm-hmm. But how does the survey instrument handle the parents with respect to the question about how many children do you have, where are they, and so on? Opportunity for double count or missed count?
We have deduplication procedures to make sure we don't have duplicates, but the directions are specific. It's about who's living in your household, not whether you have children.
Good morning. I have a question about how our college students count themselves when they're multiple students living in an apartment or in a house, right? Because when we looked at the application, it wasn't really clear what household meant.
Well, household, those students living in that kind of situation would be living in a household. They're just a household that isn't, it would be a less traditional household. It's not a nuclear, household doesn't mean nuclear family. It's
right.
The people living together in a household.
So we're a little concerned because in many respects, the students see themselves not as a unit, but as individuals living in an apartment, right? So we're putting our plan together, we're trying to figure out how to communicate that.
We want to work with you on that to make sure that happens.
I'm not sure I should ask this question, but would you like to comment on the politicization of the census?
The Census Bureau is not a political organization, so I can't comment on that, but...
I think... well, I don't know if I can, but I think what I would say is, as a resident of Syracuse and somebody who cares deeply about this community and cares deeply about the impact that it has on our community, I am doing the most that I can. Our community partners that I've mentioned are doing the most that they can to ensure that all of our residents have good, accurate information about the census and the impact that it has, so they know that they are protected and they know that it is important to respond. Does that kind of answer your question? Okay. Maybe I'll find you after.
Is Braille part of the collection process? Is a blind person, a person
yes.
visually impaired?
We have multiple ways of supporting those who are visually impaired. Absolutely.
I have a comment and a question, actually. The comment is, on the slide where you showed you conducted a survey of, I don't know who they were, of people who talked about what they saw as barriers. I mean, the N was 45. I mean, that's incredibly small. So I don't know how valid that is. And my question is about the churches. So are you, there's hundreds and hundreds of churches. Are you focusing on the churches in those areas that are hard to reach people? Or are you doing a general? And if so, how in the world do you do that unless you do it at like the diocesan level and the with the Catholic Church and whatever the other hierarchies are? How are you accomplishing that? And when you get, are you personally going to the churches? Or are you asking the spiritual leaders to do the push for you?
We are working at the diocesan level. We are working with communities of faith in specific tracts where we may have difficulty with self-response. We are reaching out to individual faith leaders as well and their congregations.
And if I can add to that a little bit, so to your first comment, yes, incredibly small sample size here. The information that we're looking at, the options themselves, this list of barriers and at-risk communities, that's just what we know to be true from Census Bureau information. So kind of the numbers attached to those, this survey went out to about 500 service providers in the city of Syracuse. We got 45 people that responded to it. So it's just there kind of as a reference. I think really the value of this slide is just to see who does the Census Bureau consider at risk of being undercounted and what are some of the barriers, what are some of the reasons why.
It would be helpful to put on the slide who this went to, because
sure.
I had no idea whether this was just a random survey or who the people were. I think that would be helpful. It makes it more valid, I
sure.
think.
And then to your question about kind of religious organizations, adding on to what Matthew said, we have we have a person who has been helping us to coordinate our faith communities, Latoya Jones with the Healthcare Education Project. So she's working on planning a brunch for faith leaders at the end of March. It times up with that worship weekend that Matthew had mentioned. So we're looking to Our goal is to bring in about 100 faith leaders, really targeting some of these tracts that we know are most at risk of undercount, to make sure there's lots of great information out there, lots of guidebooks that are targeted specifically to faith communities and about how to build that information into their worship. And so that's one thing that we're looking at doing, as well as we have a couple organizations who have applied. I mentioned that New York State grant opportunity. We have a couple organizations who have applied with a focus of targeting our specifically churches, but we know that working with some of our organizations that serve our New American population, we're thinking about mosques, we're thinking about, you know, holistically about our faith community and tapping into that.
My question's about the citizenship status, and I know that was kind of big last year, and I'm kind of wanting to figure out where that ended up in the court system. I understand it's not going to be on the census this year, but where did it end up? How did it get adjudicated, and do you have any response to that?
The Supreme Court did not allow them to proceed with the question because of a procedural matter. We don't ask about the citizenship question because of that on the 2020. On some of our other surveys, we do have questions about citizenship. We don't count citizens versus other people for the purpose of apportionment. That's not how the Constitution works. Constitution calls for accounts of all people living in the United States.
Can you talk a little bit about the other surveys that you're mentioning?
It's the American Community Survey.
How do you prevent somebody being counted more than once on the survey?
That's why we ask questions about your name and why we're working this on a household basis. We have a deduplication procedure to make sure everyone is counted only once and in the right place.
Is there an age requirement for working as a survey taker or as a census taker?
You have to be 18 at the time that you're working, although if you're 17 and going to be turning 18 very soon, you can apply.
I have two kids that meet that requirement, so.
It's a really great job. It's a wonderful working environment, and I love working for the census. This has been such an amazing experience. It's an opportunity to be part of something historic. It's an opportunity to give something back to your community, and it's a great experience.
I apologize, but the longer that slide is up there, the more confusing it becomes.
Oh, no, let me just...
What?
That will make more sense.
I was just trying to figure out what it was... Could we go back to it for a minute?
Do you have another question?
Where did this come from? Is this a local set of data?
Yes.
Okay.
So this 45 total survey responses, I said those are service providers from our community, largely from the city of Syracuse. And when I say service providers, it was nonprofit organizations. It was city and county staff. It was library staff. It was the police and fire departments.
And you could check multiples because we only have 40, but we have 100 and some responses, but we got 45. So they could check multiple
boxes. Yes, so they
boxes
could rank three.
Issues. Okay, so this is a local... Fine, I'll stop there then. You can move the slide.
I really appreciate your patience answering the questions. I was looking at this risk of undercount. And if you pull the colors from blue up, it averaged to about 20. So are we just going to say 20% people are not going to respond? And I understand if you have religious leaders and census takers, that would probably cut down the rate. And the higher end, it's really, we're going to lose a congressional seat, right? At least. So what are the other measures that the city is taking to raise the response rate and cut down the undercount?
Yeah, sure. So I had mentioned this slide, which I kind of gloss through, but I think this ambassador program is going to be really key to helping make sure that our residents know that the census is happening, that they know where they can go to respond. Libraries are some of those places, community centers are some of those places. So we are, I think, almost covered to have either paid or volunteer canvassers out in those 20 most at-risk of undercount tracts, those purple ones that were really kind of in the center of the city. So that is one thing that we have going on. I think the other part that really I glossed over, but talking about some of the grants that have already been awarded to organizations in our community, but also that opportunity with New York State for organizations to apply for grants. We have probably 15 community organizations. So that's our four city community centers. It's Fanny, you are working with, was it? Yeah. Oh, RISE submitted the application though. RISE, NIDA, our libraries, we have the food bank, Access CNY, so lots of organizations that touch lots of people that have requested funding to do their own activities, their own canvassing programs, to host events at their sites where they're really going to do everything that they can, is my understanding, to make sure that they're getting to the residents that they serve, but also the residents in the community around where their centers are. Does that help? Did that answer?
This level of engagement by the Syracuse and other Complete Count Committee and their efforts are at an extremely high level. I want to point that out, that this is a very high level effort that we're getting from the city and the county and all of our partners, which are going to go a long way in making sure we have a complete count.
What is the final, it may have been on here and I didn't see it, but what is the final date when everything has to be done?
We need to get the count for apportionment to the executive branch on December 31st, 2020.
You mentioned the local effort is a very high level, and it certainly sounds like it, which sort of presumes across the country there are communities that aren't doing an equal amount of effort. And if that's true, then we get a better response. Those communities do not. Now, it's not a local issue, but then at the national level, how the census numbers are rectified or managed, does that become a distortion process in our favor? And as that said, I don't think that's a local issue, but within the management of the census across the country, is that variation in response levels amongst communities because of the level of local effort, is that become a statistical problem?
No, because the census is not a statistic. The census is a count. We are counting everyone. We have help from communities and partners. That does not distort the result. States and local governments are sovereign of the federal government. So the engagement that gets into that sort of political dimension that, you know, you need to speak to those officials if you're concerned. But I don't think we're doing a disservice to our communities here or anywhere else by working aggressively towards a complete count.
All right, please join me in thanking our speakers. Come talk about the census.